Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Joy Taylor, of course, is joining me. Jonathan Vilma will actually come on set today. We don't get that much anymore.
Yeah, we had LeVar yesterday.
I know.
It's a COVID protocol stuff, so when we get people in the building, we can...
Yeah.
Get them on set.
So let me, some thoughts about Tiger Woods yesterday. We all felt a little different with Tiger Woods because he meant more to us. I said this a couple years ago when he won the Masters, when he came back. I was just incredibly emotional watching on the couch. And, you know, different actors, different entertainers, different musicians, they just land differently for us. Maybe you go through a tragedy in your life and you listen, you know, for me it's been an Eric Clapton song. For you it could be Beyonce, it could be Kanye, it could be anybody. And it was a time in your life that you really needed something and that musician or that artist or that painter or that athlete delivered for you. And, you know, Tiger Woods, it's really interesting what we ask of our athletes. And I consider music and sports the only places in America where we ask 15 to 20-year-old young men and women to run companies, and the company is themselves. And I can't speak for them, but let me speak for me. The idea that I could be a $100 million franchise at 17, I couldn't have done that at 30. And so what you see with Tiger Woods is magnetic and amazing and polarizing and vulnerable and flawed. And yesterday he drove too fast on a dangerous road and he made a big mistake. And we've seen some mistakes, but I've always considered him a gift. That I understand, I've always tried to, that adults would struggle with the riches and stardom we ask of our artists, our entertainers, our musicians, and our athletes. The fact that you look around the NFL at these quarterbacks, and you look around the NBA stars, and you look around baseball and soccer, and so few of them have missteps. But Tiger was always different. Whereas Michael Jordan had the struggle to prove himself at Carolina and played in a rigid Dean Smith system and prove himself as he was tackled by the Celtics and the Pistons. And we watched that 10-part documentary on Michael Jordan. And I think Joy and I were both taken back by how much of a damn struggle it was for the greatest basketball player, the most glamorous basketball player, the best-dressed basketball player, the best-looking basketball player, the most skilled basketball player. Good God, he was fighting with his own front office. Tiger was different. Television at 3, agent 11, worshipped by 15. That is a cautionary tale. And it is not a surprise that there have been some missteps and moments like yesterday that are really scary. And with that, I bring in Tom Rinaldi, Fox Sports, who's been covering Tiger for over two decades. He always got the exclusive. He certainly did following that Thanksgiving accident, and he is now joining us live. My first reaction yesterday, Tom, I was sick to my stomach. I said, golf, I didn't grow up with money. So golf was for rich people and old people. And Tiger made it cool, and he made it inclusive, and he made it like he was an athlete. And my first thought yesterday was, oh, God, no. It's been a bad year. You're really close to him. What was your first thought?
Almost exactly the same. It was not for the legend and the athlete and the golfer and the all-time great, Colin. It was for, predictably, I'd say, for the man. And I think whether you know him or not, that's your first reaction. That was compounded by seeing the state of the car. And we understand that the car obviously is going to undergo further damage due to extricating him. But nonetheless, to see the airbags deployed, to be so thankful for that, for the crumple zone, to see the images of it 30-some odd yards or whatever it might have been off of Hawthorne in that downward winding part of that boulevard, whatever speed he was traveling at, you naturally wondered about survival. And that's a frightening, frightening thought. And that was my first thought.
Tiger was socially different. He was a star at Stanford. And socially, he didn't have a robust social life. And initially, he, you know, trusted people and was kind of jovial. And then he got burned a couple of times by the media and shut himself down. He never shut himself down with you. You had a trust with him. Do you remember the first time you met him? And do you remember the first time you thought, he trusts me?
Well, the first time I had any real substantial time with him, he was at his absolute zenith, Colin. It was in the 2000 season when he was competing the Tiger Slam, essentially.
Yeah.
And I sat down and did a sit down with him at Augusta National. And afterward, I'm a handwritten note guy. And I wrote him a handwritten note to say thanks for the time and how open-hearted and generous he was. And I reached out to Mark Steinberg, his longtime agent and great friend, and said, if I send this to you, will you get it to him? I'll never forget. Steinberg deadpanned, well, I have no use for it, Tom. So yeah, I'll give it to him. And I did. And sure enough, the next time I saw him was at the subsequent U.S. Open that season. And Colin, there was a media gathering in the media tent. He did a press conference, and then there was a small gaggle when he used to do those. And on his way out the door, he just happened to catch my eye and just said, thanks for the note. And maybe from there, for whatever reason, and if he were on this line, and we certainly wish he was for many, many reasons, he would, I'm sure, bust my chops and bust yours about the fact that he probably regrets that we've been as connected as we have been over the years. It's a connection I never want to overstate. It's not like we go whitewater rafting every other weekend, but he is somebody who, through, I guess, reasons I'll never fully understand, has been wonderful toward me, cordial, kind, open, can throw a jab with the best of them, can break your chops. He's just been wonderful toward me.
You know, Tom, there are certain things that are hard to describe. I tell the story all the time is boxing was so big when I was a kid. I used to watch a cartoon show in the morning in Seattle, and they broke into programming to say Ali beat Foreman and Zaire for a cartoon show. And you can't really describe how big it was. Boxing was huge in the 70s and 80s, and Muhammad Ali was massive. I want you to take my audience back to what it was like, the galleries at the zenith, at the top of covering Tiger. Many of my people that will watch these clips on YouTube and such, they're 20. They have no idea what it was like. You've covered everybody. You've covered everything. Was it surreal?
Yes. The sound, the fact that he was, Colin, and I thought you described this beautifully when you said Jordan and Tiger meant more to their respective sports than anyone else. And I would even say that perhaps Tiger, because of how he changed his sport in terms of its inclusive category, that maybe he even outpaces Jordan in that regard. 8 and 9 and 10 deep, the children that wanted to see him, touch him, be a part of him, the older generations that wanted to see him, the people of color, the black and brown faces that came out. And I said this, Colin, I really believe it. Right now, he is among the five most compelling figures in our country across any venue, any societal institution, for many of the reasons you eloquently laid out at the top of this hour. For what he achieved, but also what unfolded in the wake of that achievement. I'm compelled, as you are, Colin, by greatness. But what he embodies is greatness at its highest note and also at its greatest cost. That's what, in so many ways, Tiger embodies. And to me, that's the best I can do to put my finger on why he is so compelling.
You know, it's interesting. We tend to love people that are more vulnerable. Brady never ages, and he's not as, I think, embraceable as Peyton Manning in the multiple surgeries or Brett Favre, the death of his father. They were so embraceable. Tiger was hard for many in golf to embrace initially. He was so worshipped. And then he had real world problems. and then he comes back and wins the Masters. And those galleries, I mean, it was hard to find a dry eye at Augusta. It's so unique. His comeback is like nothing I've ever, it's a different Tiger Woods, right?
I could not agree more. I was bowled over, Colin, by the number of people who reached out to me, texted me in the wake of Tiger winning in 19, exactly as you describe, stoic men, crusty men who were crying, through sending texts out, who were moved so emotionally. And as you try to think as to why, I think there's two pretty obvious reasons, and then there's individual reasons. Here are the two obvious ones. Number one, because of the generational loop so perfectly portrayed. 97, the bear hug with Earl and everything he had poured into Tiger and that iconic moment. And then Tiger, all those years later, hugging his own children after all he'd been through. Second reason, Colin, is because of his seasons and moments of failure. Some, of course, self-imposed. Others that were physical in terms of their breakdown. And the fact that he endured and ultimately prevailed through those for that moment is something that just moves people so deeply. I've been blessed, Colin. I was at the game when George Bush threw out the first pitch post 9/11. I was at the first Women's World Cup, Brandi Chastain. I could go on and on about, I was at Jordan game 6 over Russell, but I've never seen an emotional reaction to a moment in sport, an achievement, a victory like Tiger in 19. It's indelible. Something I know I'll never forget.
Tiger turned 45 in December. If he never played golf again, he's best or second best ever, certainly the most dynamic for a decade. Do you have any information? Our thoughts on his future this morning?
Obviously, we begin with hoping that his recovery, his health, all of those things are going to be the priority. To be a father, to be a friend, to be somebody who can lead his best and fullest life. But here's the thing, Colin, his competitive fire as lit by the game of golf will help him in all of those other pursuits because he is so driven. Whether that does lead to a return to golf and then competitive golf, that's way out on the horizon. But I wouldn't say it's that way out on the horizon already in that man's DNA and in his mind. And wherever it resides, it will serve as fuel to help him achieve the more immediate and important priorities to get back to health. And I think, Colin, you know, the notion as to those lower leg injuries and how serious they are, it's going to be a difficult, grinding, grueling rehab, but he's been through it before and come out the other side.
God, I just love looking at these images. It's just incredible.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah, I say this often. I about once, twice a year, I go down the Tiger Woods YouTube rabbit hole, and I watch some of his shots, and he was so mesmerizing. There's three things in my life that have changed my TV habits: The Sopranos on Sunday night, the NFL, and Tiger Woods. It literally for a decade, Sunday night, I would literally go into a weekend and think, get all your crap done, Cowherd, because Sunday at 3, I'm turning the television set to Tiger Woods. And it's real. I didn't grow up with golf, and that's how I felt.
I'll also say this, Colin. He, you know, as a generalist, as somebody who's covered a lot of different sports and gotten to spend some time with a lot of different coaches and athletes, no one is more connective than Tiger Woods. No matter what the sport, people, especially athletes, Colin, and coaches in particular, let's say college coaches, they are fascinated by the guy. They all want to talk about him in football, in tennis, in baseball, in basketball. They all want to talk about him. He's a remarkably transcendent and yet connective figure in that regard.
Tom, great having you on the show. Continued success. It just reminds me how many events Tom Rinaldi has been at, and that's why he's at Fox now. We love him, and thanks, buddy. Appreciate you having you on.
So glad. I know I said it before, Colin. So glad that you're back with us and you're feeling healthy. We appreciate you.
All right. Tom Rinaldi, I knew him back when he was a local reporter, and he was going to be something special. We're so lucky at Fox Sports to have him. He has been at, you know, it's interesting. You have these, you don't get many of these. And I was just thinking in my head, the moments when he said Brandi Chastain. I mean, I get, you know, I'm emotional. I get goosebumps. If I watch Brandi Chastain again, like I get, there's maybe been 10 in our lives. The LeBron block, Golden State to me was like, just say it, oh my God. Brandi Chastain, God, Tiger Rocco Mediate at the U.S. Open was insane. Just go YouTube it after the show, of course. Tiger at the Masters. There's not many of them. I mean, you go back and you even look to Super Bowls. There's not a lot of moments where they're just indelible. Like if I said to you, 10 best sports moments ever, you can't count your local team.
Well, to Tom's point, Tiger's so unique because it's in a sport that you didn't grow up with, I didn't grow up with. It's very inclusive. He brought a whole new audience, and he did it by himself. And all these other sports moments, there's teams, you can argue, who helped who. Like, it was just Tiger out there by himself being greatness.
And it's not always the sports you think. Miracle on Ice. I was in a bowling alley as a kid, and I heard we beat the Russians. It wasn't on live American television.
Right.
Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson. I literally had a friend, Aaron Gordon, called me. He's, get over here. You're not going to believe what's happening. I'm telling you, there's been about 15 of these, and Tiger's in a couple of them.
Just these. We all experienced it together.
Yeah. Incredible stuff. Mark Stein, NBA stuff. Luka delivered last night. Interesting player. Interesting player.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like. Are you ready?
Who will survive the career-altering elimination chamber and go on to battle the head of the table, Roman Reigns, for the Universal Championship? It's an all-new Friday Night SmackDown, live at 8 Eastern on Fox.
Yeah, I can feel it. I think there was a brief moment in time I could have been a pro wrestler. I was 8. And then,
okay, I was about to say.
Then your brain forms and you realize. I wasn't the only kid that did pro wrestling in the backyard, though.
No. Everybody does that.
You did it, too? Yeah, I did it.
Well, I actually fought.
There used to be a guy who had the sleeper hold. I don't even know if that works, but it was a sleeper hold.
I know it works.
The late Jimmy Superfly Snuka. So that was kind of who I was.
You were Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
We didn't really have turnbuckles. We had, like, trees and things like that.
Yeah. You
know? Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News. Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Pretty lofty goals for myself as a child.
Pro wrestler.
I was going to be the president.
Of?
The United States of America.
Okay, yeah.
I wrote my inauguration speech.
Oh, really?
Yep. My fellow Americans. It was very eloquent.
How old were you?
I was probably like 8.
Yeah, bubblicious for everyone.
Yeah. I was solid. I also wanted to be an astronaut and an archaeologist.
Well.
And I settled on hot take guy. So the relationship between Carson Wentz and the Eagles deteriorated this offseason. Report surfaced that Wentz wasn't exactly the best locker room guy. But two former Eagles that played with Wentz, Malcolm Jenkins and Chris Long, do not agree with that narrative.
All of these things that have happened to him, it may be hard to overcome those things in Philly, but now that he's somewhere else, those lessons are going to be things that he, I hope, will learn from and lean on and make him a better player, especially when it comes to, like, the locker room stuff. Because, like you said, he's not a locker room cancer. We play with him, and
yeah,
that's not it.
You know, this has existed as this extreme conversation when he's got things to fix, but I don't remember ever thinking, what an
No. You never. Know?
So locker room cancer is a strong term. I don't know that I would apply that to Carson Wentz.
I don't think there are many of those in sports. But honestly, if I'm always... Okay, I'll give you one. Jay Cutler wore
The first one that comes to mind.
Yeah, he wore a lot of people out. And I don't know Jay. I've met Jay. But I remember somebody I know that knows Jay well and kind of tolerated him said, yeah, he's a blank. And that, I mean, he would, like, Bear fans would come up and say hi, and he would just swear at them. Like, he was a difficult guy. When you have a locker room, let's just take guy sports, and you got 55 alpha males. And, by the way, almost all exceedingly confident. Isn't it possible that Wentz rubs some people the wrong way?
I do think that's possible. I think at the quarterback position, you have a maybe impossible standard of bringing everyone together, but you are the leader of the locker room. But I think what happened with Philadelphia is more complex than just the locker room. Like, we're seeing stories that they weren't, like, Peterson and Wentz weren't talking. To me, the story in Philadelphia isn't necessarily him getting along with his teammates. It's more about what happened with the front office and the head coach. Like, I think as a leader, you have a responsibility to try and get along with the people that are above you. Like, you're an extension of the front office as a quarterback. You're an extension of the head coach. And if you can't make those relationships work, that says more to me about it than getting along with 53 other men. Like, that's a hard thing to do. And different people are motivated differently. Everyone's not wired like Tom Brady. Everybody isn't Patrick Mahomes or Dak Prescott. You know, we have these really big leadership expectations that we put on guys. But my thing with Carson Wentz is I don't know what Carson Wentz has gone through that is so unique to Carson Wentz. Like, he had an injury. Happens to literally everyone that plays this game. He went through having to deal with players that weren't top-notch, playing with practice squad guys and guys that weren't necessarily the best talent. Literally happens to everybody. And his position was drafted. Like, who has this not happened to in the league? Like, I understand that these things are difficult to overcome. I'm not belittling his own experience. Right. I'm just saying there's this kind of idea around him, like, oh, he's like, he's been through so much of Philadelphia. Like, what of those things can't we apply to Tom Brady?
Yeah, I mean, I think quarterbacks, Howie Long always says this, you can't have two in the room. One sucks all the oxygen out. It's a difficult position because for my entire life, quarterbacks have been treated differently. You don't compete for the position.
Right.
And like in the last 3 or 4 years, oh, we're going to redraft the position. You've been here a year. Like Tua, we may move off. So quarterbacks are starting to get treated like running backs, like corners, like linebackers. And I think for some of them that grew up as the guy, like you, if you go to USC or Alabama, Oklahoma, you know, like a big recruiting school, they now recruit two great quarterbacks same year, and one of them always transfers.
Right.
They recruit six receivers a year, and none of them transfer.
But I think that's a reflection of society. We're just more impatient as a society.
Yeah.
We want results more quickly.
But some quarterbacks, I don't know if they can handle that impatience. Because remember, I think in 6-7 years, it will be part of their life experience.
Yeah.
I think we're going through that weird situation where some of these guys who grew up in the old school, which is I'm the guy, is they were going to draft another guy in the second round. It's like, whoa, time out, guy.
And I don't necessarily think that that's the way to do it. I don't really agree with that. I think you have to really be atrocious to be drafting a quarterback in the top three rounds every single year. Like, I didn't agree with the Jordan Love pick. And what happened with Jalen Hurts, like, obviously deteriorated the relationship there. But I don't know. I think there's a lot more pressure on Carson Wentz this year than everyone is giving him credit for. So before the Patriots signed Cam Newton last year, it looked like Jarrett Stidham was going to be the guy in New England, I guess to some people, not to me, but some people believe that. He watched from the sidelines, mostly only saw the field in 5 games, and Boston Sports Journal, Greg Bedard, gave more insight into why Stidham never really got a shot. He said there was not much faith in him in the building. There was a feeling within the team that they had turned the keys over to Stidham that would become a complete debacle down the stretch, and that wouldn't be good for anybody.
Here's why I became very skeptical of Jarrett Stidham. I told you this. We watch games. Coaches watch games and practice.
Right.
He practiced for a year there and couldn't beat out Brian Hoyer.
And we didn't hear anything about him. Not that things leak out of New England, because we know they don't, but there was no buzz. Like, there was no intensity around Jarrett. This was like, oh, Brady's gone. I guess it's Jarrett Stidham's job now. Like, why? Because he's there? Because he exists in the building? Like, well, what about him?
This is what I worry about, Tua, is that you're starting to hear, remember that story at the end of the year where multiple Dolphin players are like, yeah, but we're at practice and Ryan Fitzpatrick is better. Anytime you go, because I remember Belichick fell in love with Garoppolo in like 3 months. Like, Russell Wilson, I never forget, Seattle had signed Matt Flynn to a $10 million contract. At the time, it was a lot of money for a quarterback. It was some money. And literally, by the second preseason game, you were hearing rumblings, yeah, Russell's going to be the captain of the team and the starter. Legendary Kobe Bryant stories. Summer league camp. Like, summer league. Not in the league yet. People are like, oh my God, he's destroying people. Like, if you in a year of practice to Belichick, Belichick doesn't go, that's it, then you're not it. He's got 300 practices. You're not it.
I think it's looking more and more like Cam Newton is going to be back there another year. So his old team, the Panthers, are ready to make a change at quarterback just 1 year after signing Teddy Bridgewater.
Whoa.
They have been in the mix in practically every other quarterback trade discussion, and Albert Breer explained why Carolina might be ready to make a move. He said Carolina is already looking to move on. The main reason for it, as I've heard it, is that he's very clearly shown the physical limitations that limited interest in him as a free agent last year.
Yeah, but everybody knew that going in, is Teddy is kind of Alex Smith. There's arm limitations. There's throws he's not going to make. That's kind of, everybody knew that going in. So,
yeah, I think...
he's a bridge.
I think, he was. He was. And he is very capable, but if you're going to make... if you're going to win the division, if you're going to win multiple playoff games, if you're trying to go to the Super Bowl, then he's probably not the guy. But you got to have the other guy in the building in order to have a bridge.
It's Case Keenum. It's Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
Case Keenum went 11-5 1 year with the Vikings. If you give him enough stuff, you can win a bunch of games. He's a grown. I mean, 5-0 as a starter in New Orleans. But, yeah, I mean, he's not a guy. I mean, you can look at him right there. Not big shoulders. Not big arm. You know, to me, he's the best kind of bridge. Smart. Respected, hardworking, mentor abilities, and doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He won't make the throws he can't make. He knows what he is.
But, I mean, I know they're in the mix or they want to make an offer for Deshaun Watson.
Right.
But if you're not getting someone like Deshaun Watson...
well, then you draft a quarterback at number... what do they have?
So you have to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, and they could get one at six.
They have him in a 3-year, $63 million deal. But I'm just saying, like, why move off of him if you don't have another guy in the building?
Yeah, so what they're telling you is they're probably going to draft somebody.
They should.
Yeah, I mean...
can't get Deshaun Watson, that's what they should do.
Yeah, they actually have a unique package for Deshaun Watson. I'll tell you what, that division now with Brady. Brady's looking at Bridgewater right now, or a rookie quarterback. Matt Ryan with a new coach. And Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
Tom Brady's winning his division.
He tends to do that.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. The GM of the Buccaneers said Tom Brady will probably get an extension. He's 43 today. He'll turn 44 in August, and I would have no problem giving him an extension. I always laugh at this because I don't consider myself old at all. I think I'm going to do this for another 10 to 15 years until networks are over me. But if you go to Twitter, it wants to tell you that lit, hip, cool, and young are taking over the world. Even in music, Elton John was the second most successful musician in the world last year. He's 73. Our president's almost 80. Tech. Colin, tech is where the young people are. Elon Musk will turn 50 this year. Jeff Bezos is almost 60. Bill Gates, 65. And Larry Ellison, one of the smartest people on the planet, 76. College football is dominated by 69-year-old Nick Saban, and the NFL's Bruce Arians at 68 just won a Super Bowl. Meryl Streep's the best actor maybe of my life is 71. And Tom Brady is 44 in August. And I would absolutely sign him to a 2-year extension. I am not saying old is always the answer. But you guys out there just keep trying to shove us out the door, and it ain't happening. We're not going away. So Tom Brady is getting an extension. And Nick Wright doesn't want to hear about it. And some of you guys don't want to hear about it. But, I'm around for the next few years. Obnoxious as I am, Baker Mayfield's thinking that guy's done in like an hour after 15 years. Baker, Mark Stein on Luka, the NBA, possible trades, trading deadline, all-star game that nobody wants to play coming up in Zion 2.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I want to thank Tom Rinaldi for stopping by earlier and Nick Wright. I've known Mark Stein for a long time, covers the NBA for the New York Times, Kurt Gowdy Media Award winner. He's been covering the NBA forever. He covered the Lakers and Clippers in L.A., the Mavericks in Dallas, and now it's a great pleasure as he lives in Dallas. He gets to cover Luka, who many believe is going to be an MVP contender for the next 15 to 20 years. I watched that Celtics-Mavericks game, and Mark Stein is now joining us live. You know, it's interesting. Luka complains a lot. He's a perfect NBA star. He wants every call, and I love that about him. I hear stories about a Porzingis trade. Luka's going nowhere. He's Dirk Nowitzki, maybe better. He's there for 20 years. How do you compliment him, Mark, for the next 5 to 7 years? What does he need around him to elevate him, to maybe solve some of his issues? What is number two after him?
Well, obviously you want shooters, and that's universal across the NBA. Everyone is trying to get more shooters, but you also want defensive players who complement him well. This guy's going to run your team, and you're going to have an elite offense just having him, because you know he's a walking, I mean, he's almost 30-10-10 for the second straight year. He's making a run at that. And then if you double him, he's always going to make the right pass. So yes, there are turnovers. Yes, his body language gets critiqued. Yes, as you noted, he does complain to the referees too much, and he'll be the first to tell you that that's an area he needs to improve in. But look, the Mavs came into this season saying defense is our priority, and they're down around 25th in the league. The defense has been awful, and that's been one of their major issues. But you know, if you get shooters and a rim runner around him, he's going to make your offense look really good.
You know, it's interesting, Mark, we've been saying this. The Boston Celtics feel like the Green Bay Packers. They draft well. They're frugal. They're patient. They develop players. They get the young, smart coach. But they don't really go for it. And the league increasingly is a go-for-it league, like the NFL is. And Tampa Bay got Tom all these weapons. And you start looking at, Brooklyn. They just said, we're going to go for it. We'll figure out defense later. It's an offensive league. I'm going to be talking to Mark Cuban tomorrow. Cuban is a go-for-it guy in his business. There is a sense you need a second star. And I've asked this question, and I've never figured it out. If I was an NBA free agent, Dallas would be incredibly attractive. It's in the middle of the country. No five-hour flights. No state tax. Cuban is very pro player. They've won a championship before. But yet they've lost a lot of these free agent battles, Mark, and I don't know why. Can they land a number two star?
Mark Cuban's been asking himself this question for about 15 years because they haven't been able to figure it out either. And that's why you see all of their big splashes are always through trades. When they made the Porzingis trade, you know, they saw an opportunity to get him before Porzingis was going to be a restricted free agent. They were going to go after him in free agency, but they know their free agent track record isn't good. And so they saw a chance. Let's get him now, even though maybe it's going to cost us more. Get him now. Now, Porzingis has to be a lot more consistent. If Porzingis is playing like the guy we saw in the bubble, the Mavericks might have their second star or a very good third star and be a lot closer to title contention. This team is supposed to be in the mix for the number four seed in the West. Now, COVID was a factor. Four of their most important players have missed 9 games or more. So the Mavericks are up there on the list of teams that have been disrupted by COVID, but the defense hasn't been there. Porzingis has made a bumpy recovery, we'll say at best, from his most recent knee surgery. And yeah, they're still looking to upgrade. They know that they need to get more around Luka Doncic because, again, they had Dirk Nowitzki for 21 years, which still doesn't sound true even when you say it out loud, 21 years in a row with the same franchise. And then they find a way to trade for Luka Doncic and get his draft rights. They know how fortunate they are, and they can't mess this up.
I've said before, the NBA people who cover the league too often seek the best story instead of the real most valuable player. I would contend that LeBron has mostly been the MVP most valuable player in the league for a decade and a half. I do feel sometimes, you know, Phil Jackson won Coach of the Year once. He was a victim of his own success. Do you think this year we've given it to Harden and we've given it to Westbrook and do you think this year there's a little bit of a move back to, okay, let's get serious. LeBron won the title. That LeBron is a front runner for the MVP this year.
He's definitely a front runner because he wants it that badly. But look, I do not vote on awards. The Times does not permit us to vote on awards. So I haven't been a voter since I got to the Times in October 2017. But I voted on these for a long time. And just to try to give you, I think, what the general voter's perspective is, I can't speak for everyone because everyone does it a little bit differently, but MVP, you're trying to reward the best season. If this is just the best player in the league award, we can give it to LeBron as part of the Christmas Day schedule, and then we don't have to talk about it all again. That's not what MVP is. Where this MVP is not who's the first player you would pick in an open draft. Obviously, LeBron would probably still be that guy. He's still that good at 36. But has he had the best season? He hasn't won the MVP award since 2013. But has he had the best regular season in that time? Last year, he was really angry that we didn't vote for him. And so he's clearly made it an emphasis year. This year, I'm going to play. You guys are not going to be able to say that I post. We had the shortest offseason in history, but I'm here. I'm going to play every night. I'm going to take on this load because he wants to win it again.
You know, when Zion entered the league, you know, not that there was resentment, but, you know, guys like me fell in love with him, and there was a lot of pushback on his body and his weight, and he can't shoot, and he's got no mid-range game. And I look up today, and he looks like a top 15 player. He's the best. I mean, he's automatic points down low. He initiates contact. He hits his free throws. How, when you talk around the league, how is Zion viewed anonymously? If nobody's going to get quoted, what do they say about Zion, who just made the All-Star team?
Offensive marvel. I mean, now that he's incorporating playmaking into his game, I mean, he's just become even harder to deal with. I mean, he is, you know, just a monster offensively. There's no doubt about it. But defensively, still learning the NBA game, to put it charitably, and the rebounds, they're not there for a player of his size and power. You want to see him rebound the ball more, and you'll get worthy All-Star. Now, if you say top 15 player, I think I can go with you on that one. Is he in the top 10 yet? Not yet. I mean, he's going to be there. He's still incredibly young, and this is still the infancy of his career, but the Pelicans are 28th in the league in defensive rating. And I never thought they were going to be that poor after getting someone as meticulous as a coach like Stan Van Gundy. So I'm not putting this all on Zion by any means. But if you want to know what scouts kind of whisper about and talk about, I mean, there are questions about his, you know, how plugged in is he on defense?
Right.
And, you know, how quickly is he going to embrace that side of the floor? And he's got a rebound too.
90 seconds left. Can you win the NBA championship and be as bad defensively as Brooklyn?
Look, I was dead set against that trade, but look, they are making all of us skeptics very nervous very quickly. And I look, if the Lakers are full strength, if Anthony Davis recovers from his issues, I still say the Lakers are the favorite. But the Nets can get out of the East, the current East, with all the issues other teams in the East are having. The Nets can win the East as is.
Yeah. No, I think you're right on that. I think, you know, Mark, you watch the NFL and you watch baseball and the Dodgers and Mookie Betts. The teams that are aggressive and go for it and spend a little more money than they're comfortable with, or the stuff pays off. And I think the NBA rewards offensive players more so than ever, and I was wrong. I thought it was just going to be one ball, three stars, it wouldn't work, and they swept through the West very easily. Mark Stein, New York Times, happy for your success, and we'll talk soon again. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Sounds good. Great to see you.
All right. Also knows his soccer, by the way. A little bit of a soccer aficionado. Yeah, I mean, listen, the NBA is, I used to say all the time about wide receivers, they're icing at best on the cake. They're icing. You can't, and all of a sudden you look up and you're like, no, they mean a lot. Like, the receivers for Tampa, like, that's one of the reasons they got there. And the receivers for Kansas City are real good, and that's probably the reason they got there.
I feel like it goes in waves, though. Like, there will be a year where we're like, eh, the running backs, you can just draft a new running back every year. And then two or three or four franchise running backs will be like, no. You got to pay them. You need them. It just, you know, it's like always in flux.
Yeah. Black Rifle Coffee Company, veteran-owned, serving premium coffee to people who love America, first responders. BlackRifleCoffee.com. Code HERD. The code HERD, H-E-R-D, at checkout gets you 20% off your first coffee club order. Jonathan Vilma is going to be in studio today. We, of course, celebrate that because in the last year, there's been a pandemic, and we don't get many in-studio people. Joel Klatt, LeVar Arrington, Jonathan Vilma. Is that it?
I think we've had like one or two others, but Terry Bradshaw.
Well, we threw him out of the studio. So he came in, we threw him right out of here. All right, hour three, Jonathan Vilma's thoughts on Tiger Woods and more. Hour three live in Los Angeles. It's The Herd.